90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is one of the busiest politicians in town, somebody who's no stranger to you. Our guest is going to be Councilman Brandon Ellington, who's coming to us via the KKFI studio line because he's got an event planned for this morning. Good morning, Councilman Ellington. Are you there, sir?
Now, how you doing today, Joe?
No, too bad yourself. So for those that are not familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I currently represent the 3rd District at large, which is the east side of Kansas City. At large encompasses the whole city, and I believe in being proactive. Been in office since 2011, served as a state rep, and now I'm fortunate to be the at large 3rd District councilman.
So when you say at large, I know for those that are in district, they're just voted on by the people who live within a district. At large representatives, you're voted on like the mayor, by everybody in the city, correct?
Yeah, yes. And I actually look at policy like that, too. So being at large is a at-large representation. The way the council is broken up or defined by definition is a little confusing because people hear their districts, and like you just related, they often think of whatever number is on their district as their core representative. So if it's 3rd District, just supposed to represent the 3rd. If it's 1st District, just supposed to represent the 1st. But that's not actually how it's supposed to be. Your at-large representative is supposed to be encompassing policies and, how do I want to say this, engaging with communities in all 6 districts. So their viewpoint, I believe, should be a little bit different because they are voted on by everybody.
So, Councilman Ellington, you've been in office a little bit now for 3 years. How has this experience been compared to being a state representative?
Completely different. I can't even say a 180 degree change. Completely different. And I would say more than 360. At the state level, it was more based in partisan politics and ideals. So people had ideals for laws, and they typically displayed these not only in their actions but in the policies that they displayed, right? So they actually internally believed, for the most part, whatever their party position was, especially on issues. At the city, I see a different motivation outside of internal desire. There's a lot of moving mechanisms at the city. We have a continuous body at the city, and I think that creates a disillusionment of governance and working with. At the Capitol, at the state level, you had elected officials that looked more at departments as they was elected to either regulate those or completely change laws. And that's why I'm trying to say people was extremely passionate, whether it was with the Missouri Health Department and regulations on waterways and things that we would never think about in the city, or whether it was overt criminal justice laws that overtly affect people in the city and marginally affect people outside, where the rule of law is actually applied differently and looked at differently by application. So you have more passionate debates. In the city, it has been more development, consultant, heavy industry orientated directives, and I believe a lot of that falls from lack of governance. I'm trying to be nice.
I know one of the things, as you talk about that, from a state aspect, when the laws were passed after what happened in Ferguson, and you were there and I was there on the ground, one of those impacted things here, as in how the police force operates, as in people you should know, if you went over by the casino right there off of Randolph City, if you would go over there and, you know, there were speed traps, but because of things that happened in Ferguson, when laws would change, they weren't just changed in Ferguson, they would change statewide. So that changed some of the aspect of them being able to, you know, pull people over there in that little Randolph City, in that little small area, if you were going toward the casino over there.
Yeah, now the ripple effect. And maybe I should have started that way, because that's one of the things that I've noticed as a difference in the governance model. So when I was talking about people being passionate and internally displaying their beliefs, that goes to the belief of what I pass. I'm talking about the Capitol now. What I pass at this level affects everybody. It doesn't just affect my county. It's going to affect your city. And you will have rural Republicans voting on things that they know would affect the inner city without actually internally understanding it. But it didn't matter, because I believe this. And sometimes beliefs can be created outside of facts, right? Can be created out of just opinions and imagery that may not actually be factual to what actually happens. At the city level, I don't see that same forward outlook of what we do here affects everybody, because it does. Policies that we implement or not affects everybody. Tax abatements and different leveraging that we give to consultants and contractors actually affects everybody. It hits the schools, it's the neighborhoods, it's the surrounding jurisdictions. And I don't think we actually totally look at that. And it also hits the state. Things that we say and do here has ripple effects both ways. So if we, and I use the state as an example, because you use Senate Bill 5, with that bill, we looked at various municipalities. So we looked at municipalities in St. Louis. You mentioned Ferguson, but we looked at all of them. We looked at municipalities in Kansas City, too. And then you've seen Springfield and some of the other areas, and you will see overt traffic violations, overt traffic violations of so-called minorities, different realities when it comes to hit ratios, and hit ratios refer to contraband, drugs, et cetera. You will find more so-called non-minorities will have it than so-called minorities. But their arrest rate, so-called minorities' arrest rates, will be higher than the non-so-called minorities. White people, in particular, will have a higher hit ratio than all so-called minorities and have a lesser arrest ratio. And we knew that, and looking at St. Louis, you can see a disparity in traffic citations and tickets, and the type of tickets and multiple tickets going from various counties, because in their area, you have a different city, different county, in 2 to 3 blocks. They have some areas have very small counties, unlike Kansas City. But our hit ratio and our disparity numbers were still high. When you look at taxation, you see ripple effects. Last year, I believe it was last year, when we did when the county did the tax increase, you've seen several Republicans outside of Kansas City, Blue Springs area in particular, file legislation to alter the taxing process in the county. There was a ripple effect. But the police funding, you've seen ripple effects. You've seen the city take a position, and then you've seen a senator pass legislation that's actually going to increase the amount of guaranteed dollars that have to go to the police department outside of Kansas City's control over how they actually spend it. So politics and scaling, I believe, has to be understood. And that's one of the things that I've noticed as a distinct difference between motives. Again, at the Capitol level, not agreeing with anybody's position, but at the Capitol level, people's ideology is that if I change the law, I'm touching everybody. And I want to touch everybody. Now, sometimes that's bad because it's done out in abstract of reality. But on the city level, I don't think we actually do that. And if we did, we wouldn't have as many contracts going out of the city as we do lack of services going to the people.
I've got to ask you this question, as you in something you briefly talked about. We're now, well, the city of Kansas City is now doing legal action to sue the state over the forced 5%. Kansas City is mandated to give 20% of its annual budget to the police department. And now the state has turned around and they have changed that to 25%. But there was no partnership, no cooperation, no conversation with the city. And then the state put out a flyer that said that it was only that it would not have any effect. Councilman, well, that extra money has to come from somewhere. We can't just wish it up, dream it up. Where will that extra 5% come from, and how would that impact Kansas City residents?
Good way to ask a question, because I can't talk about the lawsuit at all. But the potential effects, we don't actually know where the money will come from. We know we have to pay it. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And the effects of the city will be whatever law enforcement wants to do with it. So far, we haven't seen from law enforcement a willingness to increase social-style programs. We haven't seen a willingness from them to rechange, rewrite policy in line with public opinion. Now we're talking about civilian review boards. We're talking about more transparency with the way law enforcement officers operate. We're talking about community law enforcement officers as opposed to typical patrol officers. All of these things have universal community support, but lack there of political or internal board movement. So the effects could be anything. We know we have to get the money. And one of the scariest things about that is how we've been able to sustain our budget off of various federal grants without any known internal mechanism to be sustainable. So if you look at our federal dollars that we've been receiving for housing programs, homeless programs, transit, et cetera, we're doing studies, not necessarily anything that's going to bring long-term gains off of these dollars. So, and if we're sustaining ourselves off of borrowed dollars without a way to replenish those outside of studying to see if we can grade a project without funding projects, yeah, I believe could be disastrous. Not just the police funding, but the overall budgetary outlook.
According to a Violence Policy Center study released in July 2022, Missouri has had the highest rate of black homicide victims in 2019. And the new study found that Missouri has had the highest rate of black homicide victims in the nation, all 50 states, and has held that rank for 6 years. So if what we're doing is not working, and putting more money out there, putting more police, we can't jail our way out of this. You know, there's a lot of different things that have to be done. How do we begin to get that homicide rate down? And I ask that question because, one, we're looking at this forced 5%, but Councilman, the 3rd District has the highest degree of crime within the city.
Yeah, we got to stop faking on all accounts. And then for those that are electing people, those that are just constituents that don't want to run for office, that want to support people that are in office, stop supporting people that you don't see is putting in real work and talking about policies that would actually be reflective of real change. So when you talk about Missouri being one of the highest capitals, but we're literally talking about two polarized areas of Missouri, Kansas City and St. Louis, which sits on opposite ends of the spectrum, but have the exact same social issues and similar lack there of social infrastructure that deals with those issues that are organic. And what I mean by organic, when you have an area that has a lack there of ownership, housing ownership, property ownership, and business ownership, there's a problem. Now, if we look at the inner city and we look at the cities in the inner Kansas City, if we look at Kansas City and we look at the streets inside of Kansas City, Prospect, Truce, Indiana, Pacelle, these are major corridors with infrastructure that's not being invested in or utilized. So when we talk about crime, lack of economic density, and then policies, there's a direct correlation. You drive down Indiana, I know a lot of people don't drive down Indiana, and it's the reason why I use this street. You drive down Indiana, you're going to see manufacturing complexes, buildings, access to the highway, but no real economic synergy or investment in that area. The same if you hit Prospect. Prospect is a perfect example of comparing the federal studies, lack thereof infrastructure investment in crime. So we have high property crime and we have violent activity off of Prospect. There was a $75 million allocation on the city I actually voted no on from 12th Street to 75th Street in Prospect. The reason I voted no on it because there was no associated development. They're going to study what's the possibility of investing in the type of businesses they should invest in. Well, this is madness. We know we can use those same infrastructure dollars and either improve and or build, and it's actually more rehabbing and extending building on Prospect, and the same on Indiana, and same on Truth.
How does this lack of as we've verified, we're leading the nation in murders, and the majority of murders come from the third district, which composes the urban core of the city. How do we begin to change that? Because if we bring development, it brings jobs, which in theory should help people to live within those areas. How do we begin to change that?
No, I got you, Joe. And you're going to have to keep stopping me, man, because you're about to get me on my soapbox. Because it's a network. And when I keep saying policy, and now I'm directly talking to those that want to support people in office. Those that want to support people in office, pay attention to associations and policy. So you talk about the east side of Kansas City being one of the most dangerous areas and having one of the most highest murder rates. It does. It also has specialized taxation that should be utilized for growing not only businesses, programs, but investing in new infrastructure. Not only that, you talked about PD and PD funding. We have policies and lack there of enforcement of forcing policies to direct funding and social reality programs. And what do I mean by social reality programs? Well, we know crime is related to several things. It's related to the environment that an individual is in. It's related to the educational factor that an individual has. It's related to community connectivity that a community has. So if a community is disconnected, there's a higher probability that activity is going to happen. When a community is ill-informed, there's a higher probability that funding isn't going to be associated. When a community is disengaged, there's a higher probability that victimization is going to take place. So when we look at social programs and funding, at the city level, we fund crime programs. We fund a lot of criminal studies, a lot of health studies. I voted no yesterday on a $120,000 health study that's tied in with KU to evaluate, you know, violence and what we can do about it when it's taking the information off of another program that we have, which is Aim for Peace. So it's a good thing that we understand how to go after grants and they accumulate dollars for crime prevention. It's a bad thing that we actually supplement programs that will prevent crimes. So what kind of programs will prevent crimes? Well, we talked about lack of education constitutes one of the pillars of a uninvolved, low economic density area. Well, STEM programs, educational programs, are programs that can be funded out of these same grant processes that we get to study crime. Now we're not only talking about programming, we can couple that with improving housing, because out of DOJ dollars, we can do all of that. Now let me get past excuses and hit with something that is policy that we passed that proves a point about paying attention to people in certain positions. We passed the Office of Citizen Engagement. We passed this almost 2 years ago. It took me a year to get them to actually hire somebody. I had to do volunteering for a year, but we got somebody hired. Now, why is this even important? Because it takes all DOJ dollars and it makes it available to community organizations, nonprofits, individuals, businesses, et cetera. And it would increase the amount of services that we can put out here. Now, the issue with this is now we're interrupting who typically benefits off of the grant structure without community understanding. So when we talk about the grant structure, there's no reason that we're giving millions of dollars to programs to intervene in violence when we know the only intervention in violence is an informed, educated community.
And so let me stop you right there. You're saying exactly what I want to ask the question. How critical is it for residents to be informed about matters that impact their lives from a city aspect? Because it's been said all politics is local, and local politics impacts somebody a lot faster than something coming from D.C. So you're touching on that.
I'm gonna keep knocking on the Office of Citizen Engagement to prove a point how important it is for citizens to be engaged and knowledgeable. So the Office of Citizen Engagement by language requires the city to help with qualifying language. Well, what does that mean? I've written it broad intentionally. That means the city has to help with qualifying language for the grant. So if you come in and you have an ideal, a functionable ideal, like, hey, man, I would like to take houses and, you know, I'm going to keep using STEM because I like that. I'd like to take houses and create a STEM program in here. Cool. But the office will be responsible for helping you coordinate that. They're also, by statute, supposed to oversee the coordination of grants in all departments. Well, this becomes important because multiple departments go after grants. So you have some departments that go after grants to study the issue of sidewalk, not to improve the sidewalk, but to study the sidewalk. So they get grant dollars to actually study the sidewalk and study if it's cracked in the sidewalk and to study if we should fix the sidewalk. The whole time, the average citizen is walking past the sidewalk, hopping over the sidewalk, wondering why nobody is doing nothing about the sidewalk when millions of dollars have been allocated to study it. And it's the same with crime. So the Office of Citizen Engagement, again, it coordinates all city departments, and it has a process in there that forces the city to help individuals with qualifying language. So when we look at the grant scope, whether that's lead abatement, whether that's criminal justice programs, whether that's educational programs, whether that's workforce development programs, these are all things that is accessible to the average citizen. Now, when the average citizen gets involved in this, we no longer have vacant buildings on Prospect in Indiana, because now those businesses are not only storefronts, they're program centers. Everybody doesn't want to sell things, but a lot of people have different things that they would like to instruct and do that there's funding for, but it typically goes to the same organizations. And I heard you trying to get in.
So, Councilman, you have created multiple new programs, from a program that started out during the pandemic, feeding people every week, now feeds people every biweekly, and today you've got one of those programs. What has driven you or motivated you to create these new programs for residents, not only in the 3rd District, but across Kansas City?
To show and prove. So we always talk about politics and politicians and people in office. I'm a politician, but we always talk about people in office as being abstract. In reality, that is true. But that's true because the average citizen doesn't get involved and stay involved. And when I got elected, I want to show and prove. And as I've been elected, I see opportunities and then I see internal blockages. And internal blockages motivate me and the people inspire me. So when we do job fairs, and we have a job fair today from 10 to 2:30, when we do job fairs, and particularly targeted felons, and we have no civic participation from so-called civic leadership in the black community, that motivates me, and then the people inspire me. When we have free events like movie night this Saturday, Grove Park, 7:30 to 10, and there's no overt participation from the civic engagement, but the people show up. That inspires me.
So, Councilman,
and then when I see policies that could be beneficial and people pay attention to figuring out that they're getting played, that gives me motivation.
So you've got a job fair today, 10:30 to 2:30. First, where is it located?
Municipal Auditorium, 10:30 to 2:30.
So
and we have.
And what kind of jobs will be available? Will it be manufacturing? Will it be, service jobs? What kind of jobs are available, and what is the starting salary?
That's the crazy thing, man. So we have a barometer of jobs available. We have almost every industry that we can get there. I believe all the trade unions should be there. So we have jobs from professional jobs to service jobs to union jobs to basic warehouse-style jobs. One of the lowest paid jobs there would be about $15 an hour. And then we have career occupation jobs. And I don't have the salary range on that, but we're talking about anywhere between $55,000 on up. So these are definitely careers, and most of the companies down there, if not all, are sensitive to people that have criminal issues. So it is a felon-friendly job fair, and we're inviting everybody. There's H1, and SWD is also donating a car with this one. It's a Subaru, 2010 Subaru, I believe. And our job fairs are targeted just for that, to actually bring resources and to bring people and connect them. With SWD, they have a high success ratio. So it's not one of those fairs that you get dressed up to and you just come to and you don't get employed. We actually want people to come in and get employed. So we ask you to bring your resume. I believe we have resume helpers down there. We should have individuals down there helping people with suits and all that good stuff.
So why is it so critical that, especially for those who may have a felon in their background, to be able to get that type of help when they come out? Because it used to be, and even, 10 years ago, the city had a box on there, the application. If you were a felon, then basically you weren't eligible to be hired, and they've changed that. Why is it so critical for those who may have a felony to be able to find employers who are willing to help them?
Well, before we got to the job fair, you asked about crime. And one of the drivers of crime is lack of resource. And one of the major resources that people lack is finances. And when you have a community that has a high crime rate, we also mentioned Senate Bill 5. In Senate Bill 5, we talked about disproportionate aspects of hit ratios and people being pulled over, et cetera. Well, this goes into the criminal justice center and arena. When you have a community, a culture, and an ethnicity of folks that have been marginalized by the law and marked off by the law and that are blocked out from economic engagement in orthodox society, that creates an undercurrent. So when you have a large population of people that can't get jobs, that creates an undercurrent. So, again, we look for companies that, I ain't going to say understand that, but don't have barriers to people getting employed. And then we try to bring those to the community. That way there is no barrier for folks in our community that want a $15 an hour job or that want a $50,000 a year job. And that's why we have a broad barometer, too. So we have every sector that we can go after. We having people from the airport on down just to give people diversity when they come in and to guarantee that people can actually get on in what they're comfortable and what they want to do.
And you mentioned that you have I know school starts pretty soon, so you're having that last summer movie night, and it's going to be held, again, you said this Saturday in Groves Park, which is right there, for those that may not be familiar, which is at Benton and Truman Road, right there where the old Grove swimming pool used to be.
Yeah, 1500 in Benton. I may have actually said Benton Park because I was talking fast, but it is Grove Park, 1500 Benton. We'll be there 7:30, like you said, to about 10:30, and the movie is Turning Red, and we do these movies to engage community. So everything down there is free, popcorn, juice, all that good stuff that I have, but we do it to engage community. We've been doing this since I've been on the council. We have a few more, too, so we can say this is the end of the summer, but we do have a few more that we're doing.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson, and today our guest is Councilman Brandon Ellington, 3rd District at Large. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. And our guest today is City Councilman Brandon Ellington, who's 3rd District at Large. So, Councilman Ellington, you are having the movie night. You are having the job fair today. Are you looking at any I know you always do First Fridays. Are you looking at any other events that are going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, I actually don't have my list in front of me, though, so I don't want to be wrong. I know we have an event coming up. Is our event in September or October, Joe?
September and October. There's going to be two. The Home Resource Fair.
Yeah, I got, and that one's going to be big. I kind of want to come back on and talk about those just because I don't have any of that information in front of me. But we do events every month, and we've been doing this with the No More Excuses Coalition. So, we dedicated ourselves, again, to informing the community. So when we look at crime, when we look at density issues, when we look at policy and lack there of community engagement, we believe that comes from a misunderstanding of not only one's responsibility, but one's power. And so with the events, even a housing event, and we have a healthcare event coming up, too, I believe we're going to actually merge some of that information. And then I have a few events that we should be putting together. I'm not even going to go into that. I have a few events that will be coming out right after that. So, but, again, we dedicate ourselves with the No More Excuses Coalition to getting rid of excuses. So the Office of Citizen Engagement was actually a brainchild of the No More Excuses Coalition because we talked about what was the barriers. And some of the barriers to the nonprofits and the community organizations was access, not long-term institutional funding, which we see with antiquated governance, which goes back to St. Louis and Kansas City, where lack there of certain resource models that they have in their community because of the resource factor that they use. We try to grow organically because organic growth is what is sustainable. And I don't care what community that is.
Councilman Ellington, so you have been doing neighborhood cleanups also as a part of one of those things in the 3rd District. Mm-hmm. How is this process going?
It's going good. We had a little hiccup this month. So we're supposed to do it the first Saturday every month. This month we was in partnership with a neighborhood association and another person in office, so we're still working out certain details. But the first Saturday every month for cleaning up, those that would like to get involved, contact my office because we randomly go through the city. And by me being at large, I actually do all 6 districts. So we target areas in the 3rd because the 3rd district has most dumping out of any district, but we do hit all 6 districts. We do it that first Saturday from 10 that first Saturday from 10 to 12. And just contact my office. We also have an expansion of that, which is coming from Public Works, and I'm not sure if they made an announcement or not yet, but there should be an announcement coming out with some internal things that the city will be doing, and my office will be involved with that as well, and that would be expanding some of the community cleanups. But it started out as the first Saturday community cleanups, and we're still going.
So, Councilman Ellington, you are constantly out and about in the community. What are some of the biggest challenges you see that face our city and that we have to begin to start to address?
I'm going to keep knocking this. Is lack of people being informed. Like, we walk through this city, and we walk through this city blindly, and we wonder why things happen. We watch policies get changed in front of us that direct development for the next 10 or 15 years. I mentioned at the beginning that this was a continuous body, but I don't know if people actually fully understand that, and I didn't fully grasp it until I started serving on the council. So at times I see, not at times, more often than not, I see policies and projects that started 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 2006, 2017. Right, and they've been amended 9 or 10 times before I've even seen it. So that means the original agreement is whatever it was, and then you have all of these other agreements that came about, whether they're compromises or developer get-overs, we really don't know unless we do a lot of digging and a lot of looking. I said that to go to the overt city, and the overt issue that I see is lack of understanding. Like, we need to pay attention to the policies that are being passed and how our tax dollars are being spent. There's no rational reason with the budget that we have, the amount of dollars that we actually generate, for areas to be underserved. When I talked about the contract aspect of federal grants and department receiving grants, that's bigger than just dollars coming through. We should pay attention to it. If the city receives, let's just say 20% of administration fee out of $1 million grant, yes, that's good for the city. The department receives money for helping somebody get a grant. And let's say that grant's been going on for 15 years. Well, if nothing has changed with that issue, then we probably should stop this same funding process. Not saying that it's bad for the city department to receive money, but let's use that same understanding of how to receive those grants and apply that to organizations and areas and infrastructure that doesn't need to receive it to be in existence. They receive it and they're able to do services. This organization only receives it and is only in existence because it receives it. And it has no imprint, because if it had an imprint, it wouldn't be receiving the same dollars for the same problem that hasn't been fixed.
So, Councilman,
but that comes from citizens not being engaged.
What is your vision for the 3rd District and for the city?
3rd District is to keep growing how we've been growing. So in the 3rd, and for those that don't know, Joseph is my PIAC rep. And with PIAC, we've actually been able to do some good things in the parks. We've been able to improve the parks. People are even arguing over who did what, which is good, because all we do is help with funding. So it's good to see the community saying, no, we came up with these plans, which is beautiful. Because with PIAC and the lack there of PIAC representation in the past, that's been the issue. People come up with plans, ideals, and amenities that they want to see in the park, and it never gets funded. They submit the application, and the money disappears. But we see special projects that was never submitted funded. So I'm proud to say that we've been able to kind of break that process, and that's what I want to see in the 3rd. When you look at a lot of the streets in the 3rd, before I got elected, I talked about Van Brunt and how Van Brunt has been bumpy since I was in high school. All right, you drive up and you can't sit still. Well, Van Brunt has been repaid. Most of Indiana has been repaid, right? Most of the inner city streets have been repaved. Side streets are starting to get repaved in inner city. I'm happy about that. And that's internal growth, because people are starting to not only understand what they deserve, but they're starting to articulate it like, no, we do want speed bumps. We do want resident trails. And there's no rational reason that we don't have it when our dollars are generated the same and should be spent the same. And as for the city, I would like to actually see an engaged city. Kansas City livability price per unit cost and affordability and all that good stuff is beautiful outside of our industry. In our industry, we have some of the lowest paid sectors, but the actual property values and costs, and unless they keep going up, are actually decent. And I would like to see the city grow in the compassion that we're actually investing in all segments, understanding that a city that is universal is a city that actually is beneficial. And we haven't had that model with development or even dispersing funds. We see a centralization of our funding disbursements here in the city, which isn't good for nobody. It's not good for the area. And I can use Maine and Broadway as an example. The folks that have been surviving over there for the last 10 years, I don't know how they're actually doing it, because the streets are being torn up every 2 to 3 years for a different project that's not bringing different transit over there. It's improving transit for certain folks, but it's not bringing different people across the city to that area that would increase economic density.
So, Councilman, I'll say this. So next year, we're going to be hosting the NFL draft here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
What impact will that have for the city? We're going to bring hundreds of thousands of people to Kansas City, and they'll be going from 18th and Vine, the Jazz District, to Zona Rosa, to South Kansas City. What type of impact will we see in the city surrounding that?
I absolutely have no idea. From everybody that I've talked to that has any type of internal understanding, they said this is going to be bigger, a bigger impact than the Super Bowl. I've never been in a city with an NFL draft, never traveled outside to an NFL draft, but I know with NBA drafts and NFL drafts, like you just stated with tourism, people travel just to see that. People come in and expecting a good climate and expecting to spend money. So I think the financial impact is going to be huge for certain segments of the city. Other segments of the city that haven't actually been invested in, I don't think they're going to see as big of an impact, but I think it's going to be huge overall. And I also think it has a huge regional impact on Kansas City because we've attracted two major world entities or attractions this year. But this NFL draft, I believe, is going to be something beyond measurement. That goes just to people I've talked to that actually traveled and that are in politics at various levels that seen drafts and different things. They're all telling me it's going to be something that I've never seen before.
And I know one of the things, if you go someplace, you've always got to sample the barbecue. You know, when the presidents come here, they have to sample the barbecue. So there's going to be a lot of different people trying to find out how Kansas City barbecue differs from Carolina barbecue or differs from barbecue that may be in the South. So that is definitely going to be probably one of the biggest impacts, especially, you know, we've got Oklahoma Joe's, we've got Q39, we've got Gates and Sons, we've got Arthur Bryant's. So we're going to be having people coming from around the nation to be able to sample our barbecue and being able to go back home and tell them how our barbecue compared to their barbecue.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of sad when they go back home. Like, they're going to enjoy it. They're going to get full down here. And then they're going to go home and be disappointed when they eat their barbecue. So I look forward to them tasting Kansas City barbecue and seeing what real barbecue is.
So, Councilman Ellington, as we touched a little bit on earlier, infrastructures and parks in the 3rd District, they had not been properly maintained. But now, due to some of the projects that you keyed up, that you keyed in on, Likens Park, where they now are going to get, they've got a lot of development going on around the park that wasn't there when you came in the office. What type of continued parks and investment development do you want to see in Kansas City and Kansas City metropolitan area?
Well, giving credit where credit is due. Joe actually came up, this for everybody listening, Joe actually came up with a stair-step process for funding amenities in the park. And I give an example. For those that listened to the 3rd District PIAC meeting, I want to say it was about maybe a week or two ago, one of the parks was talking about the amenities that they was doing and that they wanted to do. And one of the people on there stated that, you know, you need to apply for funding for this, et cetera, and make sure we see the paperwork. And they said, no, it's already being funded. We're just telling you what we're doing and what we want to add on to it. And I would like to see continued growth like that, strategic investments in our parks and in our community. But with parks, I want people to actually understand that there's two elements, too. So parks aren't just PIAC. We've been taking PIAC dollars and we've been working with neighborhoods and their parks to improve them. But in all reality, Parks and Rec should be maintaining, improving, and investing in these parks. And in the 3rd District, not just the 3rd District, but in the 3rd District in particular, there's been several miscellaneous park allocations that have actually used PIAC dollars that have never actually developed the PIAC project that the PIAC dollars were used for. And you see that in some of the other districts too, but more so in the 3rd, we're talking about previous administrations, et cetera. So with the 3rd District and PIAC and improvements, I would like to continue to see strategic investments. And Likens Park is a good example because they had a whole layout of what they wanted to see done, the type of improvements that they wanted to see done, and they also had a belief of what these improvements would do to the community, the aesthetic effects that they would have on the community. And again, that goes back to the process. The more people understand the process and the more that they understand that PIAC is public improvement dollars, PIAC dollars should not be utilized. I'm going to use 18th and Vine as an example. 18th and Vine is an entertainment district. It's a subsidized entertainment district. We've allocated over $700,000 since I've been on the council to the building of Hits, which sits across the street from the Soray. We've just allocated another $100,000 about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I voted no on it to that building. Well, these dollars are PIAC dollars, public improvement dollars. So these dollars can be allocated to box in a building in a subsidized area that is not public, or it can be utilized to create public spaces. So we could have utilized those PIAC dollars and committed that $700,000 to creating a community space there, which I'd have been all gravy with. I'd have supported it, I'd have co-sponsored, I'd have jumped up and down for it. But we didn't. And a community space could be anything. We didn't even create a bus stop where you could sit at. Right.
So that's one of those things. So, Councilman, kind of how we started as we wind down, the city is in a search for a new police chief, and we, as we've mentioned, the crime rate in the 3rd District leads the city. In your opinion, what requirements do we need to look for in a new chief so that we can begin to reduce crime, not just in the 3rd District, but across the city?
We need to cut the madness. The chief is a celebrated manager, right? So the policies and the directives come from the police board. The police board is a 5-member commission. Mayor sits on the police board. And I'm not talking about this mayor. Any mayor sits on the police board. So when you talk about policies, implementing directives, and changing it, that's where it happens. And then whoever the police chief is, they implement it. Internally is where I would always prefer to look for somebody. Somebody that's internal always is going to understand the pros and cons of that institution. And I would try to find somebody internal that has actually displayed the qualities that I would want in the chief. Because if they was able to do it in the pros and the cons and they still didn't get tainted, then this is the person that should be in that position. But we don't do that here. We create excuses for why crime doesn't go down. Well, we're going to get a new police chief. Well, the police chief comes in, got to give him a year or two to figure out the system, and then another year to get crime down. Well, crime hasn't came down. Well, you know, we have a new political administration in. But what they're going to do, they're going to try to figure out something, when all we simply have to do is create the funding opportunities for communities to empower themselves. Government doesn't come in and educate. They fund. Whether that's public schools or private schools that touch public money, or charter schools that touch public money, right? Or even homeschoolers that understand the aspect of being able to touch public money.
So let me ask this question. There is more work that can be done to improve the 3rd District, and it will take more than just you. How can people begin to work with you to not improve the 3rd District, but also our city?
Man, in the 3rd District, the biggest thing people can do is stop being apathetic and to stop allowing people to benefit that ain't working. So we have dollars that come through, program dollars that come through, grant dollars that come through, and we see no external outreach to the community, internal access to the grant. And we know this, and we watch it. We have to stop that. Stop being apathetical. I'm going to use a new organization just as an example. GIFT has given, I'm going to be off on their money. GIFT has given away like $800-something thousand since they've been in the, this quarter, this year. I just talked to Dude, but I know I'm off on the numbers. But like this year, they just given away like $800-something thousand to so-called minority business. EDC, funded by the city, hasn't given that much away to so-called minority businesses. And these aren't giveaways to businesses that you can't look online and see their inventory, that you can't physically go to where they at and buy whatever product that they're selling or service that they say they're giving. So again, in the 3rd District, man, people can stop being apathetical and allowing individuals to benefit off them not doing anything. We have, I'm picking on people, we have a newspaper. I talked about the Office of Citizen Engagement. It establishes that the city has to help write your grants for you, help you get Department of Justice dollars. It establishes a process in which the community can have independent self-determination. This hasn't been promoted by the black newspaper. Has been promoted by most of the African-American civic set, but these same connectors benefit off the grant process. Now, people will say, why are you only talking about the inner city folks? Because if you in my yard and you know something that can help me, I expect you to tell me. If you outside my yard, I expect you to mind to your yard, unless there's a reason that we need to collaborate, right? I don't expect you to be like, hey, man, you need to do this and you need to do that because you have things to do. So if you're standing in my yard and you see I'm struggling and you know why I'm struggling, I expect you to be like, hey, man, we're in the same yard. Let me help you out. That way we don't have that divot in our yard. That way ain't nobody going to crack their ankle when they walk over that. We safe. We secure.
So quickly,
again, as we stop being apathetical.
Quickly, as we close out,
the dollars coming through.
As we close out, is there anything else you'd like to say to the residents of the 3rd District and to the city?
I probably shouldn't. All power to the people.
Well, thank you, Councilman, and I hope you have a great job fair today. Remember, Councilman, Ellington's having a job fair today at the Municipal Auditorium from 10:30 to 2:30. They're going to be giving away a car. You just have to show up. They've got people that help you with the resumes. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our community minute. This Saturday is going to be a back-to-school field day, August 20th from 10 to 2 at the Urban Youth Academy, which is located at 1622 East 17th Terrace. And it's going to be, again, from 10 to 2. And Councilman Ellington is having a movie night this Saturday, August 29th at Grove Park, right there at 1500 Ben Boulevard. The movie will start at 7:30. Light snacks will be provided. Also, for those parents who may not have gotten their shots yet for the children, the Kansas City Health Department is going to be open this weekend with the vaccination clinic. So you can give them a call at 816-513-6108 to get more information. For Cowtown Conversations, it's been your host, Joseph Jackson. I want to say, have a great day. Stay safe. If you're susceptible to COVID, wear a mask. And stay tuned for my place with Larry J.
Mm-hmm.